What's going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 39 of the MM Arcade Podcast. We are here a few days removed after UFC 300.
Are we on 39 or 38?
39. We are on 39.
I think in take one, you said 38.
Oh, see, that's a good thing. We did a second take because I stumbled my words. You said UF 300. It was all out of place, that recording. But no, Rob, how are you feeling after UFC 300, man?
No, I'm good, man. And, you know, I guess the biggest question was everybody was wondering whether or not UFC 300 would live up to its name, up to its hype. And I don't know if it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy or something like that, but it did. It did. I feel like the fighters put more on the line. They put more of themselves out there. And we saw that in especially some of the standout fights. But honestly, the whole card, everyone just seemed to dial in for that 300 event.
Yeah, and particularly I would say maybe for that $300,000 bonus. But we are going to get into all the fights from UFC 300, break down our thoughts and opinions. So if you are new, please like, subscribe. We hit 21,000 subs after that last episode, after we already hit 20,000 subs. So maybe we'll go for 22 after this episode. But we're going to go in reverse order, probably the best way to do it, starting off with the main event, one of the shortest fights of the card. Alex Pereira defeats Jamahal Hill by KO in round one for the title, the light heavyweight title. Rob, what were your thoughts, man?
What can I say? Okay, what can I say? Now, my relationship with Alex is weird because I personally make it a point not to like any of the other middleweight just because they are potential opponents. I don't want to get to know them that way. I don't want to start blurring lines between my side of the fence and your side of the fence. Understandably, it's all business and it's not personal, but still, I like drawing a line in the sand.
That's fair.
So him being a middleweight at that time kind of put him on my radar in that respect. But then he moved to light heavy and then he's doing his thing in light heavy. And the longer he's in light heavy, the more I'm starting to like the guy. The more I'm starting to like the way he just approaches fights. I got to say, he's got to be one of the coolest fighters at the moment, in my opinion. Like his walkout is just so stoic and strong. And like even that bow and arrow thing he does with the scream is just so cool, dude. And then we look at his actual fighting prowess. And the dude is just a phenom in the stand-up game, in the stand-up world. He is leagues ahead of most other – or definitely of any other lightweight, light heavyweight, but most people in the game, I feel. And obviously that stems from his ridiculous amounts of experience and championship level of fighting in glory. But he looked so composed. And I think he threw three punches that night and one of them knocked Jamahal Hill out. Like it is crazy. And then just when he got kicked in the groin and just like pushed the ref back, I do understand. I saw a few people saying like that shouldn't be allowed. If the ref steps in, you can't push the ref away. So I do see how there's some controversy in that. But that was cool. That was just another cool thing to do. And then Jamahal Hill does that sneaky, sneaky trickery of stepping on Hill's foot before he throws his lead uppercut, which I like as someone who's done that in sparring sometimes to muck around, I imagine it would be really hard to try and think about that sort of stuff in live work in a fight. But It really puts you off. If you had your foot stepped on when you're sparring, it is so weird. It's a weird thing because you can't get away. It just throws you off. It's like getting tripped over almost. And not only that, like the range of that uppercut was so short and sharp and still sent Hill to another planet. Must mean he generates so much power with his body and his levers. It's just that was such an amazing performance.
Dude, I think I rewatched that segment about 100 times because it was definitely one of the top moments of the card, and we're going to mention the other thing very, very soon. But just the way he gets hit in the groin, Herb Dean tries to stop. He's like, nah, mate, I got this. Let me cook. And almost immediately after, knocks Hill out cold. And if you watch that replay, replay, Hill's eyes roll back into the back of his head. It was straight out cold. And yeah, maybe Herb could have stopped it a little bit earlier, I would say. But it was just such a cool moment. Though, touching on the controversy, I saw what Charles Sonnen said. I saw what a few other people said. I don't know, man. Like, Hill seemed ready, good to go. He put his thumbs up. He had a slight detour of his eye to Herb Dean, and that was it. I don't think there is much to say about that. Maybe Herb could have handled it a little bit better, but he shoved him away. Like, what are you going to do in that moment? Just let them fight. There's a lot of other instances people want the fighters just to be able to fight and the refs not to get involved. Herb stepped away. I don't know.
Yeah, I think first things first is never, ever, ever, ever drop your guard.
Yeah.
Ever. No matter what. And it's like, until someone pulls you off him, or until someone stops you physically, you don't stop. Okay? Because you can't put your safety in the ref or anybody else. Okay? It's on you.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, I think it's tricky because the line's a bit blurred. If the ref's going to step in, he needs to step in. If the ref's not going to step in, he's not going to step in. I think that – I don't think the fighters and the fighters' reactions should ever really have an impact on what the ref is doing. And you've seen it done before where, like, a fighter goes, oh, my – like, you know, leans over and says, oh, it was a low blow. And then the replay comes and the ref stops it and the replay comes and it sees nothing. It was just bull crap, yada, yada, yada. So – sure, that wasn't his. I don't think it would have changed anything. I think,
no.
Like in my opinion, the way the fight was leaning was very much towards Pereira.
Mm.
If I'm going to say anything, Hill looked a little stiff. He looked a little.
Can we talk about
frozen.
That?
Frozen.
Yeah,
you know, he looked a little stuck in the mud. If I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, it was the thing that I mentioned in the last episode, and I caught flack from a couple of people talking about Hill's flat-footedness and his footwork.
Mm.
He looked so just, as you said, stiff and flat-footed and sluggish, and maybe that's just the way that he always stands, but he just never looked comfortable, even when he was throwing his kicks, even when he put some sort of offense, there wasn't much, but some sort of offense towards Pereira. He just didn't look all that good. And yes, of course, he's coming back from a severe injury, only 10 months after it, usually a one-year thing. So he's got some excuses there, hasn't fought in a bit. But even before that moment, I just didn't like the way he was standing. I didn't like the way that he was moving. And that's obviously easy coming from someone that's not a fighter. But I don't know, man. What do you think about that?
I think the time off affected him.
Mm.
And it's not ring rust per se. It's more not being used to the lights, the pressure, the nervousness. And it's not used to. Used to is the wrong way of saying it. It's like climatizing almost. So the more you do something, the more comfortable you get at it.
Right.
You know? So fighting regularly or semi-regularly helps you climatize to those nerves, those pressures, the adrenaline dump, the adrenaline spikes, the lights, okay? And sometimes we see this with fighters that have a layoff. They have a pretty bad first round, but then they climatize by the second, third, fourth, fifth. I feel like that's what we saw with Hill. I feel like, unfortunately, the time off, the lights hit him, massive fight, massive stakes, and I think it started him slow. I think it like he had like a really slow start and Pereira didn't let him get a run up, didn't let him warm up at all, you know. Mm. And that's not what he should be doing anyway. Like,
yeah,
it's just I think it was that was the reason.
Yeah.
I think that was the
I'm just so happy for Pereira. Like, he's really brought a lot of new life into that division. Not to say that it was floundering or anything, but him being there with Yuri there and Hill there, I'm really excited about the light heavyweight division now and trying to talk about the future. First of all, I'll ask, what do you think is going to be next for Pereira? Should he stay? Should he I know there's always been talks about him potentially moving up again to heavyweight. There was this post there with Aspinall staring down him after the fight, or after he just knocked out Hill. And that was a pretty cool moment. But I don't think Pereira should be moving up to heavyweight. I think it's a completely different ball game. But what do you at least think he should be doing next?
It's tricky. It's tricky. Pereira's done a really good job of avoiding like heavy grapplers, you know? And I feel like, personally, I feel like the dude that would have given him most problems is his teammate, Glover, right?
That's a good point. Yeah.
So I think he's in a good spot. I don't know how he would look if you threw him up against, say, Curtis Blaydes in heavyweight. I think he's going to have a long night there. But then maybe he doesn't. We don't know. He's surprising a lot of people. I think he is like getting away with a lot more because of the matchups he's been given. Obviously, styles make fights.
Yeah.
And but in saying that, there's no doubt he's championship level. He is now the current light heavyweight champion. He's a phenom at stand up, which you know makes any sort of grappler wrestler hesitant. Yeah. He trains day in, day out with Glover, who's one of the best grapplers that division scene. So
yeah.
Where he goes, I don't know. I thought I saw somewhere that Dana White was kind of shutting down Pereira going up to heavyweight. But
I'm glad. Yeah.
Mate, after the performance he just had, the world's kind of his oyster. I will say though, the most disappointing thing of his fight was his cringy celebration after being
do you know like the origin of that? Like, you know why he did what he did?
No.
Okay, so there is this big TikToker, I'm sure you've seen him, called Khabib Lame, and he does that, like, when there are videos where people kind of overly complicate simple tasks, and then he does TikToks that are like, this is how simple it really is, and that's how he finishes it. That's essentially what Pereira was saying. After all of this trash talk by Hill, saying he's going to stand toe-to-toe with him, knock him out, Pereira did what he did, and he's like, it was that simple. That was the point of it. So does that make sense still, in context?
It's still cringy as hell. I knew it was meme related to a degree, but it's still cringy as hell, dude.
Like, I thought it was funny. Like, it was a cool cold photo.
Aztec warrior, right, with his face paint, screaming, bow and arrow, knocking dudes out left, right, and center, and then he does a little child's meme on the end. Come on, dude.
I thought it was funny. Given the context of everything and what Hill said, it was funny. Absolutely. I thought a lot of people thought it was. Did you see the photo where he was on the ground? Hill didn't know where he was in Fairyland, and he was just like that. That was cold, bro. Absolutely cold. But in terms of next, I reckon against Magomed Ankalaev, that's probably going to be his next opponent. I don't think, like, maybe Pereira would be able to turn around to 301 because we know it's in Brazil. That would be perfect for the card itself, but I don't think his potential opponent would be ready by then. And apparently Pereira had a broken toe. Did you see that? He broke his toe before the card.
No, I did not.
So I don't know. Maybe that needs to heal a little bit. I reckon it's Ankalaev. What do you think for Hill though? What should he be doing next?
Oh, mate, just rest his head and then come back. Like
rest his head?
Yeah, because I think you definitely need to rest your brain a little when he gets rattled.
Yeah.
So it doesn't get accustomed to that sort of stuff.
Mm.
But, you know, and it's still in a state of trauma. But
for sure.
Rest your head and then just come back and do what you did. Like he was running through people prior to that fight.
He was.
He's still young.
Yeah, if you were to look at the rankings and everything, I think Jiří probably makes a lot of sense. But just after what happened with Pereira, that would be a tough fight for Hill because we know we've just saw in that card what kind of knockout power Jiří has. But that's what happened in the main event. Let us know what you think in the comments below. We're going to go now to the co-main. Zhang Weili defeated Yan Xiao Nan by unanimous decision. But Rob, we were talking a little bit about this before we started recording. What did you think of Zhang's performance in that defense?
I think it's crazy because Zhang Weili won the fight twice. That is,
she did.
Right? Like she, yeah. Yan Xiao Nan was limp as a rag doll at the end of the first round. I don't know. I understand the rules, and the commentators were saying it on the night that, like, if she can make it to her feet, the fight goes on. But I don't know. I don't know. In my opinion, I think Zhang Weili beat her twice.
Yeah.
But in saying that, Yan Xiaonan dropped Weili so many times and looked so much bigger than Weili. I am curious to see how much grappling she has done, because she got kind of just manhandled on the floor in that sense. But yeah, I thought it was a good fight. Xiaonan has like some real grit to her though.
Yeah, she's tough.
Yeah, she's tough as nails, mate. It was such a tough fight. So it was a solid fight, and Weili kind of showed her championship level experience and caliber in that fight.
Absolutely. That moment you were talking about in the first, towards the end of it, I was a bit torn, and I just rewatched it when we were talking about it. So the ref kind of like grabs onto Yan's hand, or like, you know, holds it, and there was some resistance back there, and that was literally 5 seconds or so before the end. But then literally in that 5 seconds is probably when she was taken out cold, because the way that she got up, she clearly wasn't in it. So
no,
the way she was
kind of let go of by Weili, she was limp.
Yeah. But that's like the thing, dude. So he grabs her arm, notices that she's still there. She's like offered some resistance. And literally in that 5 seconds is where the difference was. But the thing is, it was the end of the fight. So was that 5 seconds enough to call it? Do you know what I mean? I think that's why it was very, very close. And to her credit, she went on to finish the fight. She lost, like, you know, let's say in a dominated fashion, because Zhang won 49-45 across all the judges' scorecards. But she still brought up a pretty decent fight, even given that. So we wouldn't have gotten that if the fight was called, but you know what I mean? This is the way things go, right?
It is.
Yeah. So that was the co-main, and now let's talk about the BMF title fight. This was, I think, the fight of the night, the moment of the night. Max Holloway defying everybody, defying my predictions, defying a lot of the bookies' predictions. Max Holloway defeating Justin Gaethje by KO in what was it, technically the last 2 seconds or the last second?
It was.
By knockout at 4:59 of round five is what the UFC says. What do you think, bro? Tell me about it.
I want to say some highlights, okay? Yep. I do think, now Max looked unbelievable. That dude, they broke the mold with that guy. Like, he is straight up lost legacy of character. Okay, his fight was unreal. His mindset and mentality was unbreakable, unshakable. He's an animal. Now, Holloway looked great. His spacing was perfect. He was using his longer arms to great effect. And that spinning back kick in the first round that broke Gaethje's nose.
Yeah.
I think that was the catalyst for the entire fight. I
agree.
Okay, and I've got to give it, like, the BMF belt, everybody's got their opinions on it. I've expressed my opinions on it and yada, yada, yada. These two guys are the embodiment. Like, they lived up to the task and what the belt meant, I guess.
Yeah.
In spades. Because, mate, Gaethje broke his nose at the end of the first round and then fought another four with it broken, which is mind-boggling, because you can't imagine how hard it would have been to have a broken nose for four rounds against Holloway, who was hitting him. Okay, and so it was such a back and I definitely think that broken nose played a huge factor in this fight.
Yeah,
it gave Holloway extra stopping power on Gaethje. But in saying that, Holloway's jumping, spinning back kick, going backwards, is so clean.
Landed it like 10 times, bro. It was amazing.
I've seen him do it in other fights because he does it from such close range.
Yeah.
And moving backwards, it's such a nice kick. And then the way he finished the fight, okay, so he did his usual, like, in the middle signal. And Gaethje's like, yeah, dude, let's do it. And they both met up. Holloway's ahead four rounds at this point.
Yeah.
Okay? No need to do it. Gaethje has a broken nose, but still he understands this is his way to win. And they just throw, and then Holloway gets Gaethje and just sends him out cold. And that, like, that would have had to have been the biggest BMF statement of anyone's ever seen. It was such a Chad move, dude. Like, it was gnarly.
Dude, he literally risked it all on red. I wouldn't say he was up four rounds. I definitely thought that Justin Gaethje won the fourth. I know. I think the judges agree with that as well. I know a lot of people might disagree, but he absolutely put it all on red. He was willing to throw it away for that moment because he is Max Holloway. And yeah, maybe another thing to secure the bonus, but he did secure the bonus. Like, absolutely, he was getting something. He ended up getting 600 grand, which is insane. He just proved at the end of it why he is him. He is Max Holloway. Oh, the doors are open for that dude now after this. He could fight Topuria. He could stay in that division and fight for a title. Like, he could do whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah.
What a performance, man. That was such a good
fight. His stock has gone through the roof. I do want to say, though, when we say he risked it all on red. Now, Holloway has the best chin in the UFC.
Yeah, but it's still Gaethje, broken nose or not. You know?
Yeah, but even still, like, I feel like there's more red than black at that point.
Sure. But all right, so let me take you to the moment. What was it? It was in the third, I can't remember now, where it wasn't even considered a takedown, but Gaethje absolutely took Holloway down with that right hook to the temple. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about. I know that Max, granite chin, not getting knocked out. But this is how the fight game goes. There is every chance that could still happen, especially when you're fighting someone like Gaethje.
Well, Gaethje's got a crazy chin too.
Absolutely. To survive all those punches until the end, for sure.
That was unreal.
I love that fight so bloody much. It really was a highlight.
Yeah.
It was a standout for that entire card.
Stock has gone through the roof.
Dude, how can Topuria, you know, say he doesn't deserve the fight anymore? How could he possibly say that?
You know what else is crazy? Holloway's still only 32.
No, he's not. I thought he was a bit older than that. He's been fighting for so long. I thought he was at least 34.
I know. I know, dude.
That
I
is know. Crazy,
it's
bro.
Crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. The thing that I love the most, they did so many things right from the kind of presentation standpoint of this card, but the way they cut to Topuria in the front row and his reaction. Yeah. Even though he came out afterwards, he talked to Ariel, like, obviously he wasn't that impressed is what he said anyways. But he looked a little shook, man. He was like, whoa, what the hell just happened there?
He did.
I think that's the fight to make next, for sure. But what we need to talk about now, though, is what does Gaethje do? Like, obviously go away, heal up, rest up. It's kind of crazy how things go, because we're going to talk about this after the UFC 300 breakdown. He could have possibly been fighting for the title, and now he's not, and now the dude that he knocked out is going to be fighting next. But what does Gaethje do? Does he rest for a little bit and fight someone like Charles? Like, what's the go for him?
Yeah, definitely. I think he rests up, obviously. That was a fight.
Yeah.
Right? That was a five-round war, and then he got finished at the end. Like, needs to rest and then just gets back on the horse. I think he fights someone like Charles. Again, maybe. It's hard because some of the guys in the top five, like, we got McGregor and Chandler up there as well, doing whatever they're doing. It's hard to find out who's fighting who. Maybe he rests up and then fights Sarukian, you know?
Nah, Sarukian's getting the title shot next. That's for sure happening.
I think he's fighting Poirier, though.
Yeah, but like he was, my understanding, he was offered it straight away in the back, and then he said, obviously, no, okay. I just fought. So that's why Dustin got it. And after that is almost certainly going to be Sarukian. That's the way that I'm seeing things go.
Yeah. So, Gaethje's definitely in a bit of a tricky position.
He is. You know?
All that matters, though, right now is him resting.
Yeah. Yeah, especially, what is he now, 35, Justin?
Getting some R&R.
Yeah. So let's see what happens. But Max Holloway, Justin Gaethje, that was an amazing fight. Probably the fight of the night, the moment of the
night. Highlight of the night, for sure.
For sure. And speak of the devil, Charles Oliveira, let's talk about his fight against Armen Sarukian. Probably one of the controversial fights, even though I thought it was an understandable kind of decision for who won the fight. But Armin Sarukyan beats Charles Oliveira by split decision, 28-29, 29-28 across the board. What do you think about this one, man?
I thought it was a good fight. I think Armin really cemented his caliber in that fight, because Oliveira, that was a very, very good version of Oliveira we saw.
Mm.
You know, there were a lot of moments Oliveira took advantage of, but Armin like really just took it to him.
Yeah.
Like fought him in his guard a lot, which is sketchy as, because Oliveira's guard is probably one of the best guards in the game. We'll say there are a couple of highlight, like standout moments for me. Him getting out of the guillotine that Oliveira had him in, that was gnarly. That was like what we saw with Volk and Ortega. It was just, it was on. And Oliveira's guillotine is good, like one of the best in the game. And for him to get out of it, like just tough it out, right? Was like, it was great.
So good.
And then, like, did you see that axe? You see pictures going around all the time. Like,
his leg was like this. The dude.
Yeah, the flexibility of the dude. Like, and he lands it. It was unreal. It was really, really cool.
Yeah.
But I think we saw the grit of Sarukyan in that fight. We saw the mentality. Like, he wasn't worried about Oliveira's grappling at all. He just took his own fight to him. And I think that's the mentality you have to have
for sure
to be in that championship level conversation.
Mm.
One more thing I'll point out about Armin, right? He punched a dude in the crowd on his walkout. Dude, like, guy's an animal walking out, but still aware enough to see some dude dissing him, and he goes out and starts swinging.
I thought he said something like really racist or something. Well, apparently all he did was flip him off, and Armin was like, "Nah, screw that. I'm going to throw a punch at you as I'm about to go in and fight this high level dude called Charles Oliveira." That was ridiculous, man.
Yeah. I don't think Armin should be held accountable at all. And I think we've seen Dana White mention that, like, I don't think he holds him accountable at all. Mm. But even I think legally, because like, it's just like at the zoo, you don't put your hand in the cage of a tiger.
Mm.
And like, you got to understand, these guys are pepped up, ready to do combat, die inside an octagon for your entertainment. And you're trying to poke them on the way out, dude. you get what you deserve.
Yeah, he was an absolute dog that night. That getting out of that guillotine, I thought from then on, he's absolutely going to go on and win this. Like, his face, like, it was exactly like the Volk choke. It was so red, but you saw in his face, he's like, I'm not getting choked out right now. There is literally no chance that this is happening. The thing that I wanted to, there's a couple of things I wanted to point out. First of all, that first round, right? He gets the illegal kick. Should he have said, I want to go back to the position? Because in all likelihood, he does not win that first round after that kick happens, even though he took back that position, even though he technically had more control time because of that moment, because of the choke, Charles pretty much won that first round. Second, I obviously went to Armin. I think it went down to the third. Do you think it was as controversial as some people are saying it? Like, especially because of the DAS towards the end of the third? What do you reckon?
The kick is tricky because, like, if that rocked him, even if he's tough as hell, he's never going to, like, go away from that. But if it rocked him, that's going to affect him that round, maybe the next, no matter what happens. So I feel like there needs to be some sort of punishment for that kick. It was an effective kick.
Yeah.
You know, it was a powerful kick. I feel like the one warning, you know, is tricky sometimes.
Mm.
You know, it's it's because it those sort of strikes can change fights.
Yeah, and what if he doesn't recover from that? Like, I don't know. It was a weird moment. I understood why he wanted to go back to that position, but what do you think about what happened in the third? Does Charles Oliveira's choke towards the end effectively mean in one judge's eye and a lot of people's eyes that he won that fight? What do you reckon?
Not really, because he didn't secure the choke. He didn't finish it. It's that's the risk with submissions in the game. Sometimes you put them on, but they don't work out for you, and you end up on the bottom.
Yeah.
This isn't a jiu-jitsu comp.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. I don't think attempting submissions is like an advantage like it is in jiu-jitsu because let's put some more time on that. Armin probably might get out of it, and then Oliveira's arms are like gassed.
Yeah.
And you don't know. The rest is.
I saw this video. I can't remember who it was from, so forgive my ignorance, but he was explaining why Armin seemingly went limp at the end of it, because it just meant
limp
that he was
in body down.
Yes, correct. And limp, I use that word in air quotes. Yeah.
No, but that's how you defend it.
Well, that's the thing. So I watched this video and he was saying that's exactly what Armin was doing. He obviously knew that there was only 10 seconds to go. So he went into that position to put less pressure on, knowing that he probably already won the round and then the fight. And a lot of people saw that as Armin going limp. He's out. It should have been called, or it should have been seen as a bigger moment in the judge's eyes. So I think that was the explanation that I saw.
He was never out.
Yeah.
He was never out. That's how I defend it. If you like that, that's the defense for the DAS. Like you got to, that's just what you do. That's
so is that, would that be the defense you use if you're in the middle of the round or early in the round, or would you try another way to get out of it?
No, whenever I can. Yeah. Like as soon as I feel that choke, you belly down to relieve pressure.
Yeah.
You got to put your right hand low and you got to belly down on it so that he can't cinch it up.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's the defense to it.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people misinterpreted that as him being out or him being limp. So there you go. There's the explanation. And obviously I still reckon that Armin eventually takes on Islam Makhachev. We'll see what happens with that. But we're going to push through. We've still got a lot of fights to talk about. Quickly, bro.
So many.
Bo Nickel defeating Cody Brundage by submission in the second round. Yeah, what do you think?
Don't care. To be honest. I don't care. I don't care for Cody Brundage very much. I think Bo Nickel, I think we saw some potential holes in Bo Nickel's game. You know, Bo Nickel finally got a guy that he couldn't just do what he wanted with.
Yeah.
And Cody Brundage isn't the best fighter in the world. But yeah, I think like Bo Nickel finally versus a dude that could kind of wrestle, kind of strike, and he didn't look as good as he has previously because he's been running through like shoe-ins for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is what it is. I think he's got some work to do before he's ready to fight like top 10 dudes.
Yeah. Still a couple of years out for that. Next up, we've got Jiří Procházka defeating Alexander Rakic by TKO in the second round. Dude, I was really impressed by Rakic until this moment, obviously. He was looking big, strong, really good, especially being out for so long. I liked him. I liked how he performed in the first. He absolutely won the first. I thought he was doing really well, but Jiří is just this freaking nature, man. He just kept going forward. What the hell?
Yuri's a psychopath, dude. he's crazy. And that's kind of what I expect, though. That's why I never bet against Jiří because he can go into these modes of Terminator where he just pushes and pushes until he lands shots to kill you. But I don't love the idea of taking one to throw one, but it works for him. And yeah, he's just, I've got to give it to Jiří. He's got one of the strongest mental games and mentalities in the division. Still think he's a psychopath, but
he went 3 days in a dark room to prepare for this fight.
He does all these crazy stuff. He does like,
what the hell?
He does like pre-fight rituals where he does a ritual at the front of the arena the night before a fight.
That after too. A fan caught him afterwards, apparently.
Yeah. He's just, that's him, you know, and obvious. Right. And I do believe though, that's one of his strongest attributes. I think that takes him to another mental plane where he's just about unkillable. So,
Insane.
You know, I, I'm curious to see what Jiří does next. I'd like to see Jiří Hill next. That would be cool.
I think that's a fight to make. I worry for Hill in that fight. But I really hope that Rakic bounces back strong after this, because, as I said, I thought he performed pretty well in the first, but he was just up against this freak of nature called Jiří Prochazka. Next up, we've got Aljamain Sterling. Yeah, go on.
Rakic, like, he looked really technical. He looked really good, really well put together. But Jiří was just offering angles you can't prepare for, man. You can't prepare for that level of unorthodox striking. You can't prepare for the mentality of, like, I'm going to hit you sort of thing.
You're going to go
before
to the bathroom,
we jump into the next
you?
One. Man, it's only been 37
it.
Minutes.
I can
it's only been 37
it.
Minutes, bro.
That's impressive. I'm impressed. I mean, isn't it funny that we get to the moment where we want to talk about Aljamain Sterling defeating Calvin Kattar and we pause? I know a lot of people do not like Aljamain. I know this is one of the least exciting fights on the card. I feel bad for the dude. I'll talk about it quickly before Rob comes back. Obviously, it wasn't the most exciting performance. It wasn't the most exciting win. Aljamain did what he did with his kind of neutralizing boa constrictor self. But he still moved up in weight. He still beat someone like Calvin Kattar. But I agree that this probably wasn't the performance he necessarily wanted to put him anywhere near the title conversation, right? Now he's probably got another fight or two before he's even in the conversation for that. He probably needed to do what Kayla Harrison literally did in the fight beforehand and submit Calvin or do something a little bit crazier. Though, the powerbomb. Did you see the freaking powerbomb? Batista bombed that dude at the end. That would have been a cool moment. If he had actually pulled that off, I think that would have been a nice moment for UFC 300. But yeah, man, Sterling, I don't know. He's so good at what he does, and some people would say he's almost too comfortable because he just kept doing it because he knew it was effective. Calvin Kattar had absolutely zero response. So, Rob, I was talking about it then while you were gone. Next up, we've got Aljamain defeating Calvin Kattar by unanimous decision. What are your honest thoughts on this before I say my piece?
Aljamain just showed that he's championship caliber. Like, that's why he was a champion for so long.
Yeah.
That's why, he's a phenomenal fighter. He just handedly beat Calvin Kattar. I feel like if Aljamain Sterling not only did a great job of shutting Kattar down, but Kattar kind of just did nothing.
Literally nothing, dude. Literally nothing.
Yep. And then, as I see in the notes, like, Sterling tombstoned him at the end. That was sick.
That was the coolest moment. If he had knocked him out, I think it might have redeemed the fight, because I was talking a bit about this before. Mm. I know a lot of people don't like the way Aljamain fights. Compared to the other fights on the card, it was definitely one of the more boring ones. Would you say, I will say this, and I like Sterling. I've talked about him highly in several videos and several episodes, but maybe do you think he should have put on a little bit more of an exciting performance to get him closer to the title contention in his new division?
It's super hard to say, because, like, as much as good performances get you closer to title shots and everything else, winning does that as well. Losing gets you nothing. And if him fighting a fight that's not his own loses him the fight, it just lowers his stock. And that's the truth of it.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. Like, when you see someone in another division, like Bilal Muhammad, for instance, who keeps winning but isn't doing so in the most exciting fashion, and he's seemingly not closer to a title fight, though he should be, I felt like, and I think a lot of other people felt like, that maybe Aljamain could have done a little bit more in that regard, especially because he was dominating Calvin so much. But anyways, that's just my quick opinion on that. Next up, we've got Kayla Harrison making her debut against Holly Holm, defeating her by submission, rear naked choke in the second. What did you think of Kayla Harrison, man?
Mate, this was the biggest mishmash on the card. And this is no disrespect, but because Holly Holm is obviously a previous champ.
Yeah.
Absolute veteran, super high caliber in the division. But Kayla Harrison walked through her. She just went at her and bully the hell out of the size difference was so noticeable.
She was huge, dude. What the hell?
Aggression and athleticism Kayla brought into the fight was just, the ferocity. It looked like a massive mismatch, which is crazy to say because it's Holly Holm we're talking about.
Mm. But Holly Holm in the first decides to try and clinch with her, which is crazy. Like, this is not what Holly Holm needed to be doing. She needed to stay on the outside, use her speed, get away from Kayla grabbing her. Freaking hell. I don't know. Maybe she was trying to prove a point, but that was crazy to me. So Kayla Harrison, put her in the title opportunity next. 100%. She's gonna run through everyone. Next up, we've got Diego Lopez knocking out, Sadiq Youssef in the first round. What else can you say about Diego Lopez, man?
Mate, like, he hits like a truck. Yeah. Those uppercuts just did work on Youssef. Another fight where someone has put themselves on the radar and the attention of that top five.
Yeah.
Like, division. It's just, I'm happy for him. He went in there with just aggression, ferocity, dude, backed himself. Yeah. And just, man, he must hit so hard. He must hit so hard.
That uppercut, dude, I went in at 100 miles an hour. So really proud of Diego Lopez. That was freaking awesome. And Sadiq Youssef, not just some chump, right? Like, really solid opponent, yeah?
It's just as hard.
Yeah, 100%. This one is weird. And it's hard to criticize Jalen too much, but Renato Moicano defeating Jalen Turner by TKO in the second round. What was Jalen Turner thinking? He tried to go for the walk-off punch, walk-off knockout, but Moicano wasn't out and he stood back up and he could have won the fight there. And then Moicano did what he did for the rest of the fight. I don't know what Jalen was thinking. And I like Jalen.
Mate.
God damn it.
It's like what I said earlier. You fight until someone pulls you off him.
Yeah.
You don't leave it in the hands of anybody else, okay? That's why leaving it to the hands of the judges is always so sketchy.
Yeah.
Like, Jalen Turner drops Moicano, like, hard, drops him hard, and then does a walk-off instead of going in for the finish. That single moment lost him the fight because Moicano comes back the next few rounds, takes it down, beats him up, and... Yeah, you know Jalen is just as filthy about that as anything. So
yeah,
it is what it is. I will say though, Moicano on the mic, crazy.
Let's see what he does next. But that
did you hear his post fight? I encourage everyone to listen to Moicano's post fight speech after the mate. I don't understand 75% of it, but it is just crazy.
Next up, we got Jessica Andrade defeating Marina Rodriguez, split decision. Pretty controversial, Ron. I don't know if you have much opinions about this one, Rob, but I thought Andrade did win. I thought Marina was really good, boxing her very nicely, but Andrade probably a little bit too strong in the end, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. I missed this fight.
That's fair.
Because where I was watching it, I was watching it at the viewing party at the Star on the Gold Coast, and they didn't put the early prelim fights on the sports bar.
Oh, do you want to know why, Rob? Do you want to know why? Because KO does not play the early prelims.
Mate, is that why?
That's probably what they would have been showing. So for those of you in Australia, you'll know what I mean, right? So I used to watch everything on UFC Fight Pass. So I used to get the Fight Pass and then buy the pay-per-view separately, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I got a subscription to KO, and KO is meant to give you what the UFC gives you with the Fight Pass, and then you can purchase the pay-per-view separately. So I canceled UFC Fight Pass thinking everything is going to be showing on KO, but then they don't show the early prelims. And we know how good this card was. Stupid.
I hate having to go to three different websites to watch a whole card.
I was annoyed too. It was dumb.
It is crazy. So I missed a couple of the early fights.
Yeah.
I managed to get Garbrandt. I watched probably bits and pieces of Bobby Green and Jim Miller just because the website I was on was a bit of my reception wasn't great. But yeah.
So, well, touching on Bobby Green beating Jim Miller, this one to me was a very tough fight to watch. I know how much of a dog Bobby Green is, but by the end of it, Jim Miller just did not look in a good spot. No. He was in all sorts. It was hard to watch.
I want to say Jim Miller looked like had some really standout moments in the first.
Absolutely. Like, he won the first.
Really good for him.
Yep.
Yeah, it looked really good for him. And then he got pieced up by Green 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Okay. After the fight, we found out that Jim Miller broke his hand at some point during the fight.
Far out.
So if he broke his hand in the first round, not having that sort of output in the second and third, like that whack, would explain why Bobby Green was able to walk through a lot more shots.
Yeah.
Not to mention, but in saying that, Bobby Green's really good at taking shots and slowly volume bashing people. Bobby Green's, they're both veterans of the sport.
Yeah. I just
happy for both of them, right? Like, I'm a big Jim Miller fan, but I'm a fan of Bobby Green too. Like, these guys are dogs.
Yeah.
That just get in there and put in work. And I'm happy for both of them.
For sure. And finally, you mentioned it. So, Figgy defeating Cody Garbrandt by submission in the second round. What did you think of this fight?
Mate, I said Cody, with confidence, is evasive. He's elusive. He's hard to hit. And that was very much the case. He was hard to hit. He was, I believe, beating Figgy in the stand-up game. But Figgy, time to flip the board, starts taking Cody down. And then, I don't know, Figgy is an athlete and he's got good jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
And I feel like, I don't know, Cody confused me a little because he got put in – what did he get put in? He got put in, was it a DAS?
The body triangle, and then he gets choked.
No, the head and arm. He got put in the head and arm.
Oh, right.
And he did so well at defending it and holding out and doing the right things to get out of that. Like, it was tight at one point, real tight, but he was doing the right things and he got out of it. Then he got put in, then Figgy got his back, and Cody did all the wrong things. And then as soon as the arm went around the neck, he tapped. And it confuses me because he did – like we saw two different levels of jiu-jitsu from the same guy in the same fight. I don't understand.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess it was a really, really high-level fight, I like to think.
Yeah.
And we saw two ex-champions going at it and, I was very grateful for that.
Crazy to think that was the first fight, the opening fight in the early prelims.
Of the night.
But Figgy, man, he just looks so strong in this division. This extra weight is just helping him. That one point where Cody tried to get up and then Figgy just pushed him right back down, leading into the choke. That was just freaking awesome. Yep. So I was really impressed by Figgy, as I always am. Cody, he shouldn't go away anywhere, man. Like, I thought he was doing well in the stand-up, as you said. He needs to come back sometime soon because I think the division is better with him in it and being active. But, Rob, that was UFC 300. Do you have any final thoughts before we go on quickly to some of the fight announcements that Dana made afterwards?
Yep. I think UFC 300 lived up to its hype.
Yeah.
Okay. And to everyone listening and all our viewers, you already know this is just our opinion. We're just tongue-in-cheek talking, spitballing here, okay? I don't pretend to be a hyper-accurate analysis. I am super biased, and I pick things out that interests me. So that's why you're here, to listen to that, not to get absolute prediction, accurate, 100% accurate predictions, because my predictions, I got everyone wrong last week.
Not everyone. You got Pereira right? You got Zhang right?
No, I think I went with Hill. Didn't I?
No, you said you were going to leave your prediction in the Discord. Is that what you picked?
I said the fence. I said I was on the fence.
Yeah.
But I was leaning towards Hill.
Okay. Well, you definitely got that wrong.
I got everyone wrong. I kid you not. I got just about, no, if not every single one wrong. Except for Wei Li. I got the Wei Li one.
You got
wrong.
Wei Li right. Yeah. Well, you also got, Kayla Harrison right as well. Wait. Or did you say Holly Holm?
No, I didn't. I said home.
Bro, what the hell?
Yeah, it was a bad day in the office for me. But that was UFC 300.
Yeah, and afterwards in the post-fight press conference, Dana White announces a couple of big fights. So we've got, in your division, Rob, Strickland versus Costa, 5-round co-main in New Jersey. We've also got Islam against Dustin Poirier for the title, lightweight title, as I mentioned. And finally, it's finally officially confirmed, Conor versus Michael Chandler on June 29, International Fight Week. Rob, what do you think of these fight announcements?
I thought it was pretty, like, I'm happy with them. The Conor Michael Chandler one, I'll believe it when I see it sort of thing. The Costa Strickland Islam Dustin, right? They're much earlier than I thought they would be. Like, because he just announced them. I think Costa Strickland's 1st of June, which is before my fight. And then I think Islam Dustin is like the week after mine. So it's all like the announcements for him for such big fights, I feel like are a little late, but it's cool. Cool to see.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting for the Islam Dustin one because, like, Dustin, if you were to look at meritocracy and the regular order of things, he probably shouldn't be in there. He absolutely deserves it for everything that he's done. But there were probably Justin before him in the pecking order before he took on Max for this fight, and we know how that turned out. Armin is literally the number one contender and not fighting next, but he literally just fought. So I'm very happy Dustin is there. But it also, it like, well, in the grand scheme of things, maybe it doesn't make too much sense, if you know what I mean. But that was the UFC news. That was everything UFC 300. We hope you enjoyed that. We are 50 minutes, I think, into the episode, just getting to the game news. Yeah. And by far the biggest piece of games news for the week is technically not game news, but it is the Fallout TV show releases on Prime Video to absolute rave reviews across the board. People really love this show. I've watched it. Rob, you and I were talking about it. Have you had the opportunity to watch an episode or two yet?
I haven't yet. I'm saving it.
You can binge it, and that's the good thing about them releasing all the episodes at once. It is legit good, dude. It is legit good. It's also based on the West Coast as well. It's freaking amazing.
You know what I think I'll do? I think I'll wait. Just wait to just before the Fallout 4 Next Gen.
That's only a week away. On the 25th.
I know. April 25th. I can't wait. We've been talking about it on the episode, on the podcast for a while.
Yeah.
I'm looking for an excuse. Like, I'm just been waiting for Fallout 4 to drop that. And I can't wait. I love survival mode in that game so much.
Hell yeah.
And I just cannot wait. I'm going to make like a little squishy glass cannon nerd that lives in power armor. I just can't wait.
So Fallout 4 Next Gen, for those of you that don't know, it has been announced. It's coming out on the 25th. On PC specifically, you're getting something like ultra widescreen support finally, so you don't have to mod your game to be able to get that. A lot of bug fixes, a lot of quest blocker fixes. There's new items with Creation Club. But on console, you are getting a quality mode. You're getting performance mode. You're going to be able to run it at high frame rates in addition to all those other fixes and improvements to the game. So this has been a long time coming. It was announced literally back in October of 2022. So you're going to be doing a new playthrough of it, Rob?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
It was a perfect time to announce it well, while everything with the show, it's just everything is hype, everyone's excited.
You hit the nail on the head. You were the one that said like the news and the release are going to in sync with the TV show coming out.
Well, I thought it would be day and date. I thought they would do it very, very close because this is kind of like a couple of weeks removed, and by then, slightly the hype will go down. But saying that, because the show's been so popular, people keep rewatching it and keep talking about it. So at least it's the same month. You know, at least I got that right.
Here's the question everyone wants to know, though, Johnny. Are you, Lone Vault Wanderer, going to make a return to Fallout 76? With the show releasing, I've seen a lot of guys talking about how it's had a massive resurgence.
It has. It hit a new peak player count on Steam. It for sure has. But as of a lot of other Fallout games, like hype around Fallout as a whole is really high. But you want me to give my opinions on 76?
No, I just want to know if you're making a return. You know, the old school.
So, okay. For those of you that don't know, I used to work at Bethesda, right? I worked on the game. I was community managing that game, you know, helping with that at least. And I also used to make a lot of Fallout 76 content on YouTube religiously. So my days were all Fallout 76 for a good 3 years there. It was wake up, work on the game, play it, make coverage by the nighttime. So literally right in the morning, meetings about Ford 76, right at the end of the day, go to bed thinking about 76. The honest answer, man, is because of that, and it's quite a unique situation, I got very burnt out by the game. So anytime there is a new update or a new expansion or expedition, whatever it might be, I go back, play it out, and the game's always going to have a special place in my heart. But I don't think, because of that, I could ever go back to the game properly like I used to and engage back in the grind. I think I'm well and truly done with that part of playing Fallout 76. That's my honest answer.
Understandable, mate. Understandable. Fallout 4 it is.
It is Fallout 4. That's what I'm playing next. And then I'm not going away from Fallout. I'm just moving on to the other game.
I can't play online games, period. Like, fair enough. I just don't have the time. If I can't press pause, then I can't play it. Yeah. That's the truth. I got too many kids.
That makes sense, man. I completely get it. So Fallout 4, you and I are gonna both be playing on the 25th. Yep. I'm definitely starting a new playthrough. Don't know if I'm gonna do survival mode.
Maybe. And tell us in the comments below if you guys would be interested in like a joint stream, like me and you streaming the start of our next Fallout 4. Playthrough.
People keep asking, are we going to stream? Are we going to release more gameplay videos? Right. And the thing
if you
that
guys
we-
are interested in that, we'll stream it simultaneously.
All right.
For use.
Let us know in the comments. But the next section we've got is what we've been watching, playing, and reading for the past week. Rob, as I said, I've been watching the Fallout show, freaking loving it. So that's my answer. But what about you? What have you been doing?
So I haven't been watching anything.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading a book called Industrial Magic by Macronomicon, I think his name is. We've got the author. And it's cool. It's about superheroes and magic in the same world, but also kind of like a DayZ type apocalypse setting. It's a different sort of book. I really enjoyed the read. The romance in it is weird. It's like a very different take, but I'm there for it. Like you have to read it to find out. But in terms of playing, I have been playing Noita.
Oh yeah,
they've just received a massive update, Epilogue 2, which is awesome. The new spells, new quests, mate. It has ruined my life. it is. I can't win. I can't get anywhere. I can't make any progress. It's just. I'm garbage. You need a science degree to play the damn game. I can't. Oh, I've made no progress. Like I'm going to have to start a new run straight after this episode because I'm just done.
Dude, all people struggle with playing that game, how accessible is it going to be to other people?
Oh, I don't know. Like it's just, I don't know. It's I'm not very good at platformers, like 2D platformers. I never have been.
Fair enough.
So it's tricky to see. You need an equals parts skill and knowledge of the game. And it's just a tricky game. It is hard, dude. It takes your soul every time you lose everything. But I don't know. That's what I've been playing. It's been
fair
fun.
Enough. And finally, we've got viewer questions. As always, let us know your viewer questions in the comments below. We always try and go back as far as we can to pick enough questions for each episode. Starting off with @LoneViking, question for Mr. Whitaker. Seeing all these fighters get custom shorts, will you get a pair? Can you share what you have in mind? Great podcast, as always, gentlemen. Custom shorts, Rob?
I would love a pair of custom shorts.
Hell yeah.
I don't know how you get them, but if I can get some, I would. And I'd probably get the Southern Cross put on it.
Yeah.
Just keep it simple.
So like Aussie themed, would you have the Reaper on there or anything, your little symbol or not?
Oh, if they'll let me put it on there, that'd be dope.
Yeah.
Reaper symbol, the Southern Cross, that'd be awesome.
I hope they do it more because obviously 300, it was for a special occasion, but some of those shorts,
I can't see them doing it though.
No?
No.
I hope so. I hope so. Maybe for title fights. Maybe for the big fights. So and you know, who knows what's in your horizon soon. Next up, we've got @WilliamBlair. Question for the pod. Wait a second. Did Johnny work with Bethesda during the creation of Fallout 4? Could the default creator character actually be Johnny? I did. I joined just before Fallout 76. So no, the default character creator is certainly not me. someone was just taking the piss out of me in a video online. Next up, we've got at Max Loose Roots. Did you boys see Blue Eye Samurai? That show is sick. The story, the characters, the fight scenes, art style. Truly phenomenal, boys. Give it a shot. Did you watch it, Rob?
I haven't, but I'll put it on my list.
It's pretty good. Though I wasn't as crazy a fan of it as a lot of other people are. I don't know why. Like, maybe I went into it thinking I was expecting something very anime, and it wasn't quite that, but it was still very good. Next question we've got is from at OGGGaming7362. Question for Rob. How much are you looking forward to playing No Rest for the Wicked?
I haven't seen anything on it yet.
Have you played? No, hold on. I need to. When is it coming out?
I haven't seen anything on it.
On Steam, you are Serum, a member of a group of mystical holy warriors imbued with remarkable powers and sworn to defeat the pestilence at any cost. That sounds right up your alley, man.
No, I haven't seen on it.
Well, let's
look
see.
Into it. I'll look into it.
Apparently, it's releasing today. Well, look at that.
Oh, wow.
Today or tomorrow. It's an early access. So the last question that we have is from at wikihouse_history. Question for both Rob and Johnny. When are you guys going to bite the bullet and start watching One Piece? I feel if you say you watch anime and have to revert to watching C-tier series because you've run out of things to watch, then you have no excuse. Honest opinions on One Piece, Rob.
There's no way I'll watch it.
Same. No chance. It's too long.
There's 1,000 episodes. I do understand that there's a cool, someone's made like a cool YouTube compendium sort of thing of like way to watch it without cutting all the crap. But then I'll feel like I didn't watch the whole thing. And I guess like those, as much as I hate fillers give the characters backstory. It gives them depth.
Yeah.
And so I understand. Like, that's why I dropped Shippuden because they hit me with like 20-something flashback episodes in a row and I was like, I'm done. See you later, boys.
Yeah. It's really hard, ninja. Especially with an anime that people have watched since they were growing up. You've had literal years to digest all the episodes. For someone that hasn't done that, to come back in, like, that's why I struggled to get into Bleach because it's still being released. Like, episodes are still being released. That's why I've struggled to get back into Naruto. There's just so many episodes and it's intimidating to try and tackle it. Especially One Piece, though. One Piece is just crazy. I'll never watch that thing.
I'm looking at this No Rest of the Wicked. It doesn't look bad.
Well, I think that's why they mention it, because you might actually enjoy it. It
looks ARPG-ish.
Yeah?
I don't know.
It's an early access.
My list is too big at the moment, though.
Like, yeah.
RimWorld just released a new DLC.
Well, Noita, RimWorld, Fallout 4.
That probably takes a high priority. I've got to jump back into Dragon's Dogma 2 as well at some point.
Dude, I still haven't finished that.
I want to play Caves of Cud.
There's too much to do.
Fallout 4 probably highest on the list. I'm going to probably play Noita until Fallout 4 gets brought back out.
Well, just because of my YouTube content, I need to play Fallout 4. But I really wanted to finish Dragon's Dogma 2. I was getting close there as well. And then we've obviously got Elden Ring coming soon too.
Yeah. And like, I still need to jump back into Cyberpunk. My list is huge.
Did you never finish the new DLC?
Not the new one, no. Because I started again and then I got burnt out because I remade my character. So I did like the epilogue, act one, twice. And that mission goes for so long, dude. The one where you got to go get you got to go talk to Judy and then you got to go through the dream and then you got to go break into Arasaka. And it takes forever.
Yeah. It's on my backlog too, but so is Baldur's Gate 3 and a bunch of other really huge games. It's impossible.
Baldur's Gate 3 is too deep for me. I just can't be CBF. I just cannot be bothered into Baldur's Gate 3 right now. I think I'll do an honor mode with maybe a mate, just me and him trying to do it. I am interested in an honor mode on it because it's cool, but wait and see.
Yeah. Well, that was all the questions for episode 39. Didn't go too long in the end. I kind of pushed it along towards the second half of the podcast. But Rob, I don't know, like, future episodes for the next few weeks. We don't have that many crazy fight cars to talk about in the horizon.
And I was going to say, it's going to be tricky because my camp's really, really ramping up. So I may need to go on hiatus for a little bit again.
Oh, hold on. When do you think you're going to start that? This is the first I've heard about it, by the way. We're just talking about it now.
Sorry, guys. I'm not 100% sure. I'm going to see how hard the next couple of weeks are. But
okay,
camp's hard. Camp is hard.
Well, let us know if Rob does need to go on hiatus. What do you want us to do? How you want me to maintain things while he is gone? But that was episode 39. Mm. Thank you as always for watching. Do you have any closing thoughts, Rob?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, maybe instead of the podcast, we just do like a once a week streaming of like a playthrough on Fallout 4.
All right. Because you're still going to be playing Fallout 4.
Spitballing.
Yeah. Let us know what you think in the comments, and we'll see you in whenever the next video is of the MMA Arcade podcast. Take care, guys.